This is WGN Radio. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is John Williams. Lots of ground to cover in this hour. We'll later on talk a little bit about Airbnbs and what's happening with that segment of the travel industry. You might expect that they're doing well. Guess what they are? By how much, where, why, when? We'll get to that in just a little bit. That's been my experience, too. I don't know if you're planning on doing something this summer, get out of town and go somewhere, finally, when someplace is open, but maybe you're going to drive. Maybe the resort you normally go to isn't open or doesn't feel safe. Maybe you want to go to an Airbnb. A lot of these places I've been discovering, we've just been calling around or booked. I think a very interesting bit of homework for you and me right now is finding a reasonable, drivable vacation getaway. I don't know if the Bertrands are planning something like that, but the Williams are, and this is a challenge right now.
What's the challenge?
Well, where? There's a couple places I wanted to go to that I couldn't get in.
Oh.
One of the places that we were going to go to on Lake Michigan, just go stay in this one place. We thought we'll get the suite that has the little kitchenette, and we'll do that, but they aren't open.
We're going to go to Traverse City.
Yeah, and?
Stay with Sharon's aunt.
Oh, yeah, well, see. That doesn't work for me.
But then come back down maybe, hopefully, and spend a few weeks to have a house in Saugatuck many years ago, so stay there for a couple nights.
Yeah, well, I don't have any of those people or places.
I mean, we'll have to find a place in Saugatuck.
But. Well, you might want to get on that right now is my advice to you, because the places, I think everybody is all of a sudden going, oh, yeah, good idea, me too. We'll catch you up a little bit about that. The Dow is up 241 points. The other markets are up as well. This is interesting because Elise Glink will talk to us a little after 12:30's edition of WGN Radio News with Steve Bertrand about the fact that the jobs numbers aren't as positive as we thought. Or are they? What exactly is this unemployment number?
Well, the number of new jobs created was much bigger than expected. And that's where the optimism was from last weekend.
But the rate, we thought, went down to 13.3%. Elise is here to tell us in just a short while that it's actually 16.3%. Seems like everybody manipulates these numbers, right? That it's one way to report it, then there's another way to report it or calculate it. But last week, we cheered that it went from 14.7 to 13.3. Is it 16.3%? I've heard it said that there's really two unemployment rates. 0% and 100%. This all sounds pretty academic to you. And what matters is, do you have your job or a job? And if you do, then okay, you can live. And if you don't, then you don't care if it went from 14 to 13. Hooray. If you don't have a job, then you don't have a job. And that's the most important number. It's either zero or it's 100. But what is that national figure? We'll get to in just a couple of minutes. Let's start, though, today with Catherine Davis, who joins us again, Associate Editor at Chicago Inno. Visit AmericanInno.com/Chicago. Hi, Catherine. It's John Williams. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you, John?
Good. Let's talk about some of these tech companies and that sector that you guys follow as well. A new startup founded by two former sales leaders at Chicago-based Jellyvision is in the news. Why? What's going on here?
Yeah, so this is a new startup. They're called Mud City, kind of a funny name, but they said it originates from how back in the day, Chicago was at the same level as like Michigan and Chicago River, and the streets were kind of filled with mud, and then, you know, homes were actually raised in the late 1850s to rise above that kind of water level and the mud issue. And so this kind of speaks to, you know, their mission as a company, which is to give other startups a strong foundation, from an economic perspective and helping them rethink their revenue strategies to drive more sales.
So what's happening there? It would seem to me like that would be very tenuous territory right now, that some of these startups would have trouble getting the funding.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the long criticisms of startups is that they often rely on venture capital. The investor community here in Chicago and elsewhere is very strong. There's a lot of money being poured into new business ideas, and, you know, sometimes the the business strategy is to acquire users and consumers first, rather than actually worry about how to become profitable, and that's sometimes put on the back burner. But the idea with Mud City is that they want to help startups, you know, have a plan of profitability from the beginning. The company being founded by two former sales leaders at Jellyvision, which is like another kind of Chicago tech darling. It'll be really interesting to see what they do kind of with the legacy that they have.
So these startups, these people that have clever ideas, you could go to a bank and get money, or you could use your credit card. I'm just kind of curious about how then it is that you're able to get the attention of somebody to give you money to seed your business. I guess there's repayment terms or ownership issues, but I'm not. It's never been clear to me how people decide which path to go, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I talk to a lot of investors, and a lot of times, investing strategy is to invest a little bit across a large swath of startups and hope for a return on one, right? That generally has been the investing strategy for the last decade or so. You've seen that with even companies like Uber and Lyft, where they raised hundreds of millions of dollars and still are having issues turning a profit. But the idea behind investing is kind of, take a chance and see what you hit big.
So then there's the issue of being an upstander if you are in business. What exactly does that mean? What are we talking about here? In a minute, Catherine, stay right there. Catherine Davis, Associate Editor, Chicago Inno. Visit AmericanInno.com/Chicago is on a phone line. We were talking just a minute ago about this new phrase that I haven't seen before. Let me turn the page again. Upstanders, how startups can be upstanders. What are you writing about here, Catherine?
Yeah, so, after, the death of George Floyd, ensuing protests around the U.S., and sort of this renewed call we've seen for ending police brutality, I got in touch with a local Chicago tech firm that's mission is to help other companies diversify their staff and create, a more inclusive work culture. And so she was talking to me a little bit about, what she's been seeing from other companies and what they're doing. And the idea here is to, for startup leaders, tech leaders, really, a leader at any company, to be an upstander and just not a bystander amid racial injustice. I think this is a really important topic to be talking about as, CEOs and founders are thinking about their black employees and how to make a workplace safe for them, but also to put a public stance on, where they lie on these issues.
My guess is that plenty of employers would be very inclined to hire people of color, people that are disadvantaged from disadvantaged communities, say. That's not the same thing, but the point is if they're trying to diversify their workforce, they have trouble finding qualified candidates to fill those roles.
Sometimes that is the case. People talk a lot about a pipeline problem. But I've seen a lot of people come forward, on social media and in interviews I've done where they're like, we have had certain requirements in our hiring practices that have discriminated against, black and brown people, whether we intended to or not. And I'm seeing a lot of people kind of, rethink their approaches to hiring and diversity and what that looks like.
It's an education problem, too. That is, the pipeline needs to be filled with more people that are qualified, but maybe it's top down as well. Maybe it could be a mentorship program. Maybe businesses need to themselves find a way to get these people, whoever they are, wherever they're from, ready to work in their workforce.
Yeah, absolutely. And jumping off that, there's a new initiative going on just today in Chicago, launched by P33, a tech organization that's trying to uplift the tech community here. The idea is that they're going to be offering inexpensive courses on tech and data and cloud computing and all these things to kind of, make sure that lower-income people who maybe, aren't getting a computer science degree at Northwestern also have the opportunity to get these skills and work in these industries.
Talk to me a little bit about the University of Chicago's 2020 New Venture Challenge.
Yeah, so So, you know, this is a venture challenge or a pitch competition that happens every year, and it's one of the most kind of prestigious, startup pitches in the country at this point, called the New Venture Challenge. And last week, Pippin Title, which is an online real estate land title platform, won first place and $450,000. You think about a student pitch competition, and it's pretty remarkable that this the first place team won $450,000. Over the course of the day, the college and the investors it works with gave away $1 million in funding to student startups, which is pretty remarkable and great for these students that they have access to something like that.
Just reading from your piece, last year, judges similarly added to the cash pool. So the judges put some money in after seeing the startups' pitches, increasing it from $420 to $850. My Art Cash, an online matching platform for fine art industry professionals, dealers, and buyers, won first place in $365,000 last year, even more this year. I say that to say this. It's amazing to me that these people are tuned into where there is a need. Like, who knew? And then who knew how to resolve or improve that situation? I'm sometimes just amazed at the creative thinking that these contests bring out,
Absolutely. Another one that comes to mind that competed last week is called Lighten. And they advertise themselves as a digital one-stop shop.
Stand by. Hold on. You just cut out. A digital one-stop shop for what?
For making arrangements after the death of a loved one. They came in second place, winning $280,000. But I think the idea there is just to, whether you're planning a funeral or, planning for a burial or cremation, this is a startup that wants to just simplify that process in what's already a very challenging time for most people.
Okay, I hadn't thought of that either. In third place came Etalyc. How would you pronounce that? Etalyc?
I think it's italic.
Italic.
It is weird that it's all caps like that. Did I cut out again?
Yeah, it sounds like you got a call coming in. A cloud-based intelligent traffic management software program. Wow.
But the idea is that they want to help improve travel in large cities.
Let's talk about the jet fuel spin-out that you wrote about as well, LanzaTech. What's going on here?
Yeah, so LanzaTech, they're a Skokie-based renewable energy startup, and they produce sustainable aviation fuel. And, to kind of focus in on that one part of their business, they launched a subsidiary called LanzaJet. And the idea here is, is to figure out how to, prepare renewable diesel for the commercial market. So selling this to big airlines like American Airlines, United Airlines, et cetera.
I suppose that's a kind of a precarious place to be right now, but the jets will fly someday. That's probably got some legs, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. But they landed $50 million in funding last week to launch this.
Pardon me, just bent down to one last story to ask you about, and that was the Johnson & Johnson grant that helps LevelX educate physicians on COVID-19. That's your headline. What did you write about there, Catherine?
Yeah, so LevelX, they're a local startup that is creating software and games to help doctors learn new medical techniques. So the idea here with the COVID game is that, this is a new disease. Most doctors, weren't getting education on this in medical school because it wasn't around. And now they kind of need that training to bring them up to date on, what this condition, this disease is like and how to treat it. So LevelX really wants to help, kind of simplify that, that education process and make it kind of fun. It's a smartphone game, from my understanding. So you could do it, anywhere, anytime.
And in the process, you're learning about the disease.
Exactly, yes, and how to treat it.
And that's the market for that is healthcare professionals?
Yeah, from what I understand, their specific clients are like hospitals and, other kind of healthcare organizations that want to prioritize making sure their doctors have access to, tech that makes them better at their jobs.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Creative thinking out there. Catherine Davis, Associate Editor, Chicago Inno. Visit AmericanInno.com/Chicago. Thanks for your time today, Catherine.
Yep. Thanks, John.
Yeah. Stay well. Elise Glink joins us, real estate and financial wellness expert. She's the owner of Think Glink Media. Visit ThinkGlink.com. Hi, Elise. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Things are good, John. Thank you.
Talk to me about this unemployment number. What's happened here?
So last week, we got the official May unemployment number, and everybody was very surprised that the number was as positive as it was. It said that instead of losing jobs in May, that we actually had a net gain of 2.5 million jobs, and that caused the stock market to have an absolutely huge jump, and a jump that's continuing today. However, there was a little note at the bottom of the jobs report that indicated that there had been a major error indicating that the unemployment rate should be higher than what was widely reported at 13.3. So the month before, it was 14.9, and this month it was officially at 13.3. But the note talked about a classification error, and if it hadn't occurred, the actual unemployment rate would have been 16.3% instead of 13.3%.
So what is the Bureau of Labor Statistics saying? What is the current unemployment rate?
So it's interesting. They're saying it's probably higher than 13.3%. It's probably 16.3% for May. But if you take the same, so let's talk about what this misclassification error was, right? So the problem was trying to read data that's normally read in past, right? You do a look back for this. They're trying to read data in real time. So because we've never had a situation like this, not even in the Great Depression, where we lost jobs at such an incredible rate of speed, it almost happened too fast to be recorded. And the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, is trying to be transparent about how hard it is. And so what they said is that some people should have been classified as temporarily unemployed, but they were instead misclassified as employed but absent for other reasons. And that classification directly impacted the unemployment number for May.
So if I'm employed but absent for other reasons, then I would be counted as working, but they should have been, I'm just trying to figure this out now, they should have been declared temporarily unemployed?
Correct. So normally the other reasons is used for people who are on vacation, serving jury duty, or taking leave to care for a child or relative. It's a situation where, according to the BLS, where the worker, him or herself, themselves, decides to take the leave.
Well, that wasn't the case. That was not the case here.
That is correct. And so this time, it seems to be that a huge chunk of people who were pretty much put on furlough, so they were told to go home and do without pay,
right,
should have been temporarily unemployed, but instead were misclassified. And this is not the first month that this has gone on, and so apparently the problem started in March, where you had the first big jump of people. And the way that this might happen is that people would be interviewed. They interview, I don't know how many, 60,000 people, a lot of different people, a lot of households. So people knock on the doors. It's the same people every month who are doing these surveys. Knock on the door, are you employed? And they said, no, I'm unemployed. I'm not working. Well, why aren't you working? Well, there are other reasons. And so instead of putting them in the temporarily unemployed, they got absent for other reasons. And this has been going on since March. So in March, the Bureau of Labor Statistics said the unemployment rate should have actually been 5.4% instead of the official 4.4. And in April, it probably should have been almost 20%, not 14.7%.
Knowing that, why are the markets so good yet today?
Well, there's the, you know, $100,000 question. So I think the market is optimistic about people coming back to work. The infection rate seems to be down, and frankly, there's no other place to put your money, so you might as well throw it in the market.
Is it believed that the number being reported 13-something rather than 19-something was done for political reasons?
So that also came up from, and I think Politico and the New York Times, and maybe even the Washington Post, have all reported on this. And they think that it's unlikely that it could have been done for political reasons, simply because of the way that the numbers are recorded and who in the Bureau of Labor Statistics actually can touch the data. But what is unusual is that the BLS has not been able to correct this problem more quickly.
So
it's been going on.
Understood. So in other words, the numbers were great. We were at about 3.5% or maybe 4.5% at the beginning of the year. Maybe, in fact, even then the numbers, particularly when you got into March, but February, March, and then by April, all along the numbers should have been higher, correct?
That is correct. And, you know, let's be clear about what we're talking about. There were 41 million people who lost their jobs. So a lot of people got called back to work, but a lot of people didn't. So the continuing claims number is the number I think we ought to really be watching. How many people are filing for unemployment week by week? And you and I talked every week about how 2.1 million or 2.4 million people filed for unemployment. All through May, every single week, there were huge numbers. It's possible that those numbers were catch-up numbers from March and April and we've talked about this as well, that the state unemployment offices were unable to keep up with the demand. Their technology is simply so old that it couldn't possibly keep up. And so I think it's entirely possible that what we saw in May in terms of unemployment was these catch-up numbers, because they have to catch up and then pay you, you know, for all the amount of time that you were unemployed that wasn't counting. And then we did start to see people get called back, and so the way you had 2.5 million jobs added back in, that's kind of how that math might work. Make sense?
One last thing, yes, but one last thing about this, and then I'll let you go, and that is that we said last week that however bad the number is, we regarded it as good news because it was going in the right direction. And so it seems insane to say, hooray, unemployment is only 13.5%, 13.3%. That's a terrible number, but it's better than 14.7 or 9%, and it's better than 20%. Well, now maybe the real number is, in fact, closer to 20%. I think the question remains now, and I'm just looking again at the markets, which look forward. Which direction is unemployment going? Is it going up or is it going down?
My sense of it is that unemployment is probably going down. But focusing on this 21 million people who are unemployed, this is a bigger number than we've seen at any point in time since the Great Depression, both on a numbers basis and on a percentage basis. It's much bigger than the total number of unemployed we had at any one point in time in the Great Recession 12 years ago. And so this number is huge, and Black and Hispanics are getting hit the worst. Hispanics even worse than Blacks during this. And so if the number for everybody, let's say, is really 16.7% or 16.3%, according to the Federal Reserve in St. Louis, which tracks these particular numbers, the number of people who are unemployed who are Black and Latino is several points, percentage points, even higher than that. So it's a very scary situation if you've lost your job and the market is, you know, most of the stocks in the stock market are not doing great. The Dow Jones has a few heavy hitters that are heavily weighted that are doing great, and it's kind of pulling the Dow up. But about 75% of companies on the stock markets that trade are not doing very well right now, as an FYI.
And FYI, that means a lot of things, including the fact that food banks are pleading for help these days. I'm out of time today. Let's you and I catch up with this subject tomorrow and know that if you can make a donation to a food bank in your neighborhood, it is an investment in humans. It's important. And we'll talk about that next week. Thanks, Elise.
Sounds good, John.
Okay.
Thank you.
Elise Glink, visit thinkglink.com. It's 1242. This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. NASA's Inspector General is investigating an allegation that a high-ranking NASA official guided Boeing on an agency competition for the lunar lander contracts. Bloomberg says the probe focuses on communication Boeing had with the official before he resigned in May. Local startup accelerator Generator is launching the Midwest COVID-19 Innovation Showcase. Chicago Inno says the showcase will be an opportunity for innovators across the region to highlight their COVID-19 innovations and connect with key stakeholders in the healthcare sector. And Pippin Title, an online real estate land title platform, won first place and $450,000 at the University of Chicago's New Venture Challenge. The student startup is one of 11 that received parts of $1 million cash prize pool. That was the highest prize pool ever for the competition. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand. Markets are up. The Dow's up 289 points, the NASDAQ up 62, and the S&P 500 up 22.
This is Orion Samuelson. He's got a look at the agribusiness scene. Go ahead, O.
And looking at a pretty much red screen at the moment, the July wheat contract is down 5 cents a bushel. The July corn contract, though, trading higher, just a penny and a quarter cents a bushel. And the July soybean contract is down 4 3/4, putting the soybean price at $8.63 a bushel. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the July lean hog contract, trading down 10 cents a hundredweight. The June live cattle contract is trading up 7 cents a hundredweight, and the August feeder cattle contract is up 87 cents a hundredweight in today's trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Purdue University's Center for Commercial Agriculture will host a free Agricultural Outlook webinar at 12:30 p.m. this Friday. The webinar will feature an updated agricultural outlook, including information from the Department of Agriculture's June release of the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, along with updated profitability estimates for corn and soybeans. And again, if you want to sign in to register, the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture is the website. Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture. As we wind down the planting season, we'll get another report this afternoon on planting progress, and I'm guessing it's going to be pretty much completed for both corn and soybeans. But one of the interesting things as you end the planting season, what equipment do I need to replace? What equipment do I need to sell because it's outdated? Well, the Big Iron Auction Company has given us a list of the most popular items for auction from the agricultural scene. The machines that do the best, disc mowers, the augers and conveyors, mower conditioners, two-wheel drive tractors, drills, skid steers and attachments, balers, and other haying equipment, the best items on the auction scene at the moment. And one more thing to worry about with COVID-19 and unrest, 4 years ahead of schedule. Two large groups of periodic cicadas are beginning to emerge throughout the state of Illinois. Periodical cicadas are already beginning to emerge throughout the state, according to the University of Illinois Extension Service. And that means we'll be getting 17-year cicadas 4 years early. It's an interesting history for an interesting insect. We talked about it on the Saturday morning show last week with Jim Pazell, our specialist in ornamental horticulture. And the cicada, as I say, is a beetle worth studying because it's unique. That's AgBiz. I'm Orion Samuelson.
1249 on WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Reporter Amy Guth is on the line with a story about Airbnbs that kind of caught our ear. What's going on within this industry, Amy?
A lot of aspects of the travel industry got hit very, very hard with stay-home orders and concerns about the pandemic. And so, you know, that is an industry I think nobody is expecting anything very big out of anytime soon. However, Airbnb has reported that what they've seen from May 17th through June 3rd is they saw more booked in that period this year than they did last year, way pre-pandemic. And so what they're seeing is instead of people booking way out for international trips, they're booking relatively close to home, and they're booking with relatively short notice. So a lot more impulse kind of traveling, like, hey, this is just kind of a couple of hours away. Let's go there for a couple of days. A lot of that kind of travel. So in an interview, the CEO, Brian Chesky, said, you know, we're not seeing, you know, people are not feeling like they want to get on a plane and certainly not like they want to leave their country. And in many cases, can't leave their country. But around the world where Airbnb exists in all these different countries, he said domestic travel is way, way up. And he really anticipates that to continue for a little while. You know, that, of course, raises some questions about this IPO because Airbnb was planning on going public and having their market debut March 31st. They shelved that. There was a lot of speculation that, okay, maybe that'll go into 2021 or who knows. He wouldn't really say, but he also wouldn't deny it. He said, you know, we're still considering that, but we're also, you know, maybe not. So it kind of remains to be seen, but I think that's given a little bit of optimism. Vrbo, which is kind of an Airbnb competitor, they've also reported an uptick. Expedia has kind of said, this is kind of what people are doing right now, about what where you can go on a tank of gas. The other interesting thing that I thought the Airbnb CEO said was that what he's seeing is people are realizing, hey, work from home could mean work from any home. So they're picking maybe a remote area near their city and kind of like, hey, let's get a cabin and just work from there. If we got it, we're going to work from home either way. So he's seeing these kind of like what was usually a weekend trip. He's seeing that kind of morph into weeks long trips where people are working in place from different areas. So this is just kind of a look, kind of an early glimpse really at how travel is changing in the immediate.
So people are taking their house, drawing a circle around it and saying, where can we go there? And then maybe an Airbnb is where they're going to stay rather than some hotel. They're not flying to New York or Paris or someplace like that.
Yeah, that's right. The Expedia, there was a president of Expedia who said something like, I think he said, if you draw 250 miles around any major metro area, that's where we're seeing all this uptick. So I think it's interesting. People are like, you know, I feel like maybe I can control the variables a little easier. If I'm just in my car, I could wipe down a gas pump handle. I could, you know, just kind of be there. That said, there's a lot of hotels that are kind of trying to enter this space that I'm thinking of, like a cleaning war. Hotels are really starting to talk about like, hey, we're doing this process to clean and we're doing this one. Marriott was kind of one of the first in that space, but the other big chains followed that really quickly because I think hotels are really trying to get that business back because they were hit so badly, certainly here in the city at one point, down to like 5% occupancy, a little bit less than that even. So really, really huge, huge numbers that they're trying to get that back too. But for now, it's all about, hey, I'm going to rent a private home or you know, a cabin or something like that. Bring in groceries and everything I need and just kind of chill there. And that's sort of what we're looking at is mm-hmm. travel in the immediate.
You know, so I'm mentally drawing. I don't have a map in front of me, Amy, but if I did that from Chicago, it's too bad because I think people in Peoria would vacation in Chicago. But Chicagoans, where are we going to go? So to the west, what, Des Moines? I mean, God bless you, Quad Cities, but I don't know that I want to. That's not a destination for me. You can't get to Minneapolis. And 250 miles, I don't know what's happening with the Dells or Door County, back around Detroit, Cincinnati, St. Louis. There's your big circle, right? Something like that. So that's
pretty much.
And you know, I guess if you had a nice enough Airbnb in a nice enough little town next to a nice enough little pond, you know, it doesn't have to be Atlantic City. It doesn't have to be Las Vegas. It can be there, and that's where I'm going to take a more subdued vacation this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, a little cabin next to a lake with maybe a little fire pit or a fireplace inside, that doesn't sound too bad. It is kind of chill for the summer.
Yeah.
And that's probably what we're going to see a lot of.
I just talked me into that. So talk to me a little bit, my city bills. Why is this on your radar?
Yeah, so the city bills are on my radar because a lot of local agencies, including the city of Chicago, put some relief in effect when people realizing, hey, a lot of people have lost income. A lot of people are not working right now. Let's put some relief here so that if you don't necessarily, you know, we're not going to boot a car. We're not going to go out and put a parking ticket. We're not going to, you know, pursue certain kinds of taxes. Right now, there was a big kind of stay for certain business taxes. So as things are going to start to reopen, the relief from those types of taxes and fees are going to be phased out. So it's really important to, you know, look online and check and double check those dates. Specifically, I think the one that's probably going to hit most people is there is a grace period for things like the residential parking permits and city stickers and renewing license plates. There's a grace period you get up until July 15th, but then July 16th, boom, it is being enforced. So while we weren't seeing like cars ticketed for street sweeping and booted and things like that, that's all going to resume. So starting July 1st, those kind of ticket enforcement activities are picking up around the city, street sweeping, unpaid tickets, booting, things like that. So really important to be checking on that. Today is significant because while City Hall's payment center for anything you may need to pay, like a ticket or something like that, that never closed. But those neighborhood payment centers, most neighborhoods have those are reopening today. And drivers with tickets that maybe you didn't get to prior to March 18th, so any penalties that were incurred before that, that's going to resume. You're going to start seeing notices about that. And ticketing will kind of, it's always gone for public safety and for unpaid parking meters, but we're going to see kind of a little more enforcement of that kind of thing. So some key dates just to keep people away from tickets and the dreaded boot and things like that, but really important to kind of check the city website, and it'll show you kind of all of those really, really important dates. There's also some tax period for business owners. Essentially, they're going to be staggered every month on the 15th of every month between July and November. That's kind of the easiest way to think about it. So you definitely want to, if you have a business and you're paying taxes on stuff like checkout bags or bottled water, amusement tax, parking, transportation taxes, things like that, check with the website, check with the website on the city, because it's kind of this staggered due date now. And I don't want anyone to be late. I'm sure that people will probably be understanding because it is kind of different dates from people, but really, really important to check those new dates as we're moving into phases of reopening.
Okay, I'm just going to miss being able to go to a restaurant and not have to worry about a meter maid coming by, or run into a store and sometimes you're double parked or you haven't put the money in the thing. They haven't been very diligent about that, obviously, for good reason, but I guess we're all going to go back to normal soon. Amy Guth,
yeah,
reporting on that. Thanks for your time, Amy. Appreciate your help.
Thanks so much, John.